Joining me in the studio is Robert S. Thompson. He is in town visiting on one of the cruise ships, and he is here to talk about his book, Florence, Dante, and Me, along with his writing career. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Maria. It's lovely to be here on this beautiful summer day. I've had a great trip on the Holland America line and got off in Ketchikan. I was walking up the street and I saw the library, and then I looked around and I saw, well, there's a radio station here. So I knocked on the door and a huge dog came up to me, and I thought, gee, my gosh, this looks like you ought to be pulling a sled or something. But anyway, he was very, very friendly. We made good friends. I got talking to Maria, and here I am giving a little talk on a book that I wrote way back in 1960, actually. So this is a retro look. And if you will, think in your mind's eye what you were doing back in 1960, if you were already on this planet. And think a bit about the movies that you saw in that time frame, and also the songs that you heard on the airwaves, because I'm going to be mentioning them in a bit.
Tell us a bit about your background.
Sure. My background, I was born in 1940 in Vancouver. I went to UBC, University of British Columbia. Then I did a PhD at Yale. I was very fortunate to get a Wilson scholarship there. And I've been pretty much an academic all my life, although I like writing about music. And I took early retirement from teaching, and I set up my own publishing company, and I also wrote a bunch of books. The book I want to read or talk a bit about with you is called Florence, Dante, and Me. And that year, 1960, was the year in which I was in Florence for the whole year, and I was speaking Italian all the time. So I was learning Italian very, very rapidly. I went native.
What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've always looked back to that year. I guess you people who are listening on the radio, you can think back over the course of your life, and I'm sure you can all remember one or two years that just shine forth and which are laden with memory and recollection. That's the kind of year this was for me in Florence. It beamed like a lighthouse, actually, through the many years that I've spent now, because I'm getting on in years. But it was a wonderful year. It opened my eye to Italian art and architecture and the Italian people and their flair, their wonderful sense of style, their good humor, their artistic bent, their hospitality, the way they eat. I don't think I've had a supper without wine since 1960, so it made a profound mark on me.
What is the book about? Is it a memoir?
No, it isn't. The book actually is, back in 1960, it used to be very, very expensive for postage, and very, very expensive to phone anyone. And the book is based on 60 letters that I wrote on aerograms, which were one-page letter forms that didn't cost that much money. They were about half price. And I sent regular letters back to my girlfriend in Canada, telling her all about Italy. When I got back from Italy, she had found another guy, and she was in a bit of a dilemma. Which one was she going to choose, that other guy or me? Well, that other guy won the lottery. I didn't, but I got all the letters back, and I kept them over the years because I thought, I guess I had always thought, you know, sooner or later I'm going to write a book on this and put it all together with pictures and of the people that I knew over there and the main things that I saw. Should I read
a little bit? Yeah, why don't you read a little bit, give people a sense of what the book is about and how it reads.
Sure. Here's just a little vignette of my book. I lived in a pretty poor part of Florence, which was on the south bank of the Arno River, in a little room, actually. I just had one room on the second floor of a very, very narrow street. It's all very, very medieval. I didn't have a shower there, so I used to take a shower once a week down at the communal baths. And I'm going to read you a little passage now about what it was like to go to those baths and the impression that it made on me. I have to laugh at your stories of our friend René who is spending the year in Paris, and her three showers a day. I go to the public baths one block away in Via dei Seragli every Saturday, so I have one shower a week. These are curious places, these public baths. You pay 100 lira for admission and take a seat. when it's your turn, a stout, stone-faced woman in a black outfit and white apron and a very no-nonsense brusque manner gives you a towel and soap and escorts you to your shower booth, where you spend the allotted 10 minutes in complete ecstasy. I have always liked showers, but when you can afford only one a week, they are pure joy. The rest of the week, I splash around in the sink in my room. There is no hot water, but cold water splash on my face in the early morning really wakes me up. A few weeks ago, I got chatting in Italian with a very friendly guy at the public baths. He asked me a bunch of questions about Canada. He's in his late 20s and married with 2 kids. I gathered that they are living in wretched poverty and feeling desperate. He asked if I could help him get into Canada. I told him that I would help him in any way I could, but I didn't see how exactly. A few days later, I was sitting in my room and I heard some pebbles bouncing against my window. I looked down and there he was. He asked again if I could help. I had to tell him that I couldn't do anything. I felt just awful. His distress is so deep. God knows how he makes ends meet. How lucky we are in Canada. This book is a bit of a confession, I have to admit, in that I tell not only the official version of what I was doing in Florence, but also the unofficial version. Now, I said that I was sending letters to a girlfriend back home. Well, by the time February came around and I'd been there 6 months, I was a bit desperate for some female company. So I happened to meet a young lady who was studying chemistry at the university, and we certainly had chemistry between us, although she was very, very respectable, and this was the year 1960, so nothing really, that exciting went on, if you know what I mean. Anyway, this is a footnote of the book, but it's a taste of the kind of confessional that my book is. As I look back on things, I think I sense that my muse, that is to say my lady back in Vancouver, might have found a new love interest, and that might account for her long silences. My hunch turned out to be accurate. I was in no position to feel self-righteous, however, because I had met a Florentine chemistry student, Laura C., who cast a spell on me. She had that special Botticelli look, a mixture of spirituality and refined sensuality that you can spot sometimes in Florence. I have seen such faces as this Laura in Shop Girls in downtown Florence. She had a sweet, even-tempered personality and the gift of making a man feel enfolded and validated. I went with her to a few Sunday afternoon dances at Fiesole. My conversational Italian took a huge leap forward when I started spending time with her, I can tell you that. Some lovely little details I recall, dancing close to what were to me very, very romantic new songs in Italian, like Cielo in una stanza, which is a song about being so much in love that even though you live in a little garret, it seems like a palace. I remember her once stroking the back of my hand and commenting on the protruding veins and gazing into my eyes and saying something like, they suggest force, the veins. Suggeriscono la forza. What a lovely thing to hear a woman say. Such a subtle recognition of one's masculinity. She broke things off after about a month, but did it with real kindness and style, giving me as a farewell keepsake a pair of gold cufflinks with the Florentine lily engraved on them. The lady in Vancouver was told nothing of this little interlude, although it's possible she sensed something.
So you said these are based on letters, so it is somewhat of a memoir, is it not? Or is it kind of a mix of being a novel and a story and... How would you describe it?
I wouldn't say it's a novel at all. It's definitely autobiographical, and it's not really a, it certainly wasn't considered, I didn't consider it a memoir at the time. It was everyday life and a kind of a telling about what I was, all the thrilling things I was encountering in Italy. It's a retrospective book now, though, of course, here I am in, I just wrote it in 2017, and that's how many years later? My gosh, I can't even, it's over 50 years later. So it certainly is a kind of nostalgic, reflective, tender look at that wonderful year when I was 20, where everything seems possible in life, and you're at the height of your, probably as bright as you're ever going to be. Maybe not as strong and as big as you'll be, but you've got all your marbles and you're ready to go.
What do you hope people get from this book?
I hope it gets them interested in certain aspects of Italy, because I'd like to read you in a minute just a very short passage about my encounter with the ancient world, because I think people will, the book has an awful lot of illustrations, and they're very well chosen, I think. And I've got a number of pictures of the people that I got involved with there, and it's a very personal book. I've been talking about myself up to now, but I do a lot of talking about other people in the book. So I think you'll find it interesting. I have a website, and I have extracts from this book on the website. So if you're curious and you'd like to read more, please go there. Just Google Godwin Books, G-O-D-W-I-N Books, all one word, with the triple W and so on, and you'll come to me. I'll read you a bit about my voice lesson. I wasn't planning on doing it, but about March, I decided to take voice lessons. Now, I always started being interested in Italian opera when I was about 12. I went to see a movie, The Great Caruso, with Mario Lanza. I'm sure many of you saw it. It was a wonderful movie for introducing people to the glamour of opera, as nothing stuffy at all, as actually a very sexy art form and a very human art form. I'm reading you a passage from my book now. And the lady that I studied voice with, her name was Netta Del Vivo, and she was a top-notch voice teacher. She had an incredible background. She had pupils who made a wonderful career at La Scala and the many opera houses in Italy. And I think I paid her, I think my lessons were $2 an hour. So Italy was still recovering from the war there, and it was very, very cheap. The economic miracle of Italy would only happen later, maybe about 10 years later, when it really took off and they recovered from the war and they became a big success story. Of course, now they're having terrible problems politically and so on, but anyway. I'm going to read you now from page 167. I am back at my voice lessons and they are going well. At 20,000 lira a month out of my 6,000 lira, you can imagine it hurts. But my voice has acquired so much power and range that I'm actually dumbfounded by my sounds and break off in wonder halfway through a passage. Pardon my vanity, but remember, it's a 20-year-old talking. We plan to make a tape recording of one of our lessons. It will help me keep on track so that I can keep practicing when I get back to Canada. My teacher is an amusing lady. I almost burst myself laughing at her when she mimics my mistakes, singing through her nose, singing cross-eyed, or singing out the side of her mouth. I soon smarten up. She has huge expressive eyes and a quick mind. In my opinion, she combines three common Florentine traits: dignity, style, and buffoonery. She loves a good joke, good broad joke. She has agreed to let me try a few songs, and we've been working on nothing but scales, so I'm sick of them. I'm not really sick of them, but I'm dying to do songs. So I'm working on My Funny Valentine and the theme song from High Noon. Both are well suited to my voice. I'm going to read you a part now about going to the zoo in Rome and then my impression of the ancient world. Now, before I went on this scholarship, it was a third-year university scholarship, or junior year, to Florence. I had studied a couple of years of Latin, so I was interested not just in Italy and modern Italy, especially the Italy of World War II, because I've always been a bit of a World War II nut, but I was also very interested in the Romans and their civilization, which, of course, you can see throughout Italy. I went to the zoo, where I walked for miles and saw all kinds of strange animals. I fed a giraffe by hand, and as I did so, felt the end of his tongue swoop down onto the back of my hand. Its tongue must be a foot and a half long. Weird. Strano. At the entrance, they had two lion cubs, and you could get your photo taken with them. I was very tempted, but it cost too much. They were darlings. Other things of interest: eagles, cobras, pythons, crocodiles, strange baboons, camels, about every animal you can name. Now, what I'm going to say now, Joan, I was writing to Joan, what I'm going to say might sound really weird, but here goes. Before I came to Italy, I think at some obscure, unidentifiable level, I was not entirely 100% convinced that the ancient world actually had existed. In my mind, it seemed a bit academic, unreal, and unconvincing. Oh, I had read about it, and it seemed real, but it was not absolutely real, beyond any doubts or misgivings. I would never have admitted this to anyone, because it sounds a bit loopy, but I think it represents the truth of how I saw things. Maybe it has something to do with having spent my whole life up to now in a pretty remote, relatively recently settled corner of North America. What I am trying to get at here is that in Italy, I have experienced things at a gut level, with real physical contact. I have walked in the Colosseum and touched its walls. I have pushed the great door open of the Pantheon. I have pushed it open with little more than a tap. I have walked the sacred path along which Julius Caesar rode in triumph to celebrate his conquest of Gaul. I see myself a little like Doubting Thomas, who could be convinced of Christ's wounds only by touching them with his fingers. At the moment, I harbor no doubts whatever about the reality of these ancient civilization. I have changed, and it has come about through real physical contact. My experiences in Italy are confirming everything I ever read about her ancient past.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your book and dropping by. Again, you're here on a cruise ship. What are your next plans?
My next plans? Well, just to enjoy a couple of more days of the cruise ship. It's quite wonderful being on the top floor of that ship in 80-degree weather in Alaska and swimming and in the hot tub and so on. It's just beautiful. And the Alaska coast, it's very much like the BC coast. I think between the two of us, we've got it covered in terms of a beautiful part of the planet. It's so natural. It's untouched and unspoiled. May it always remain that way.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Robert S. Thompson, and his book. He just mentioned Florence, Dante, and Me, and information is at Godwin Books, GodwinBooks.com.